It's time to go live at Lucian Live 2022 in Denver, Colorado, April 10th through 13th at the Denver Convention Center. Discover the innovative solutions, transformative insights, and strong connections to help you lead through change. Register at Lucian.com/Lucian Live and catch Elvin and I recording on site live. We can't wait to see all of you. It's time. Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited today to be back with, I would say now a long time guest co-host of mine. In fact, I think everything in his life now takes a long time. He's retired. I think that's his job, to be retired. He's recently returned from vacation. I'm gonna hit a button here called the cheers button, because this is what he's been doing on vacation.
Cheers!
But I'm gonna hit it for as many times as he had drinks. And he told me how many drinks he had while he was on vacation, so I've got to hit the button that many times.
Cheers!
That was, I don't know, like 47 times. Anyway, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bill Papicello. Bill, what's happening?
Hey, Joe. Nice to hear, to be with you back from vacation. And, you know, being retired is a lot harder than people think. And so you need those vacations.
Cheers.
And you're, that cheers, the number that you had there only took care of the first morning. it's always 5 o'clock someplace, which is another nice thing about being retired.
For those of you that don't know, Bill was the former president of the University of Phoenix, and they had at one time, Bill, what, like over 500,000 students. And so I like to call him the guru of online learning, which means every time he speaks, he gets the gong, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, Bill, we've got an action-packed episode for us today to get to. I'm going to bring in my guests here one at a time. First, his name is Brian Keating. He's director of the Joint Apprenticeship Training Center. Brian, how are you?
All right. Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Did you know, Brian, that you were going to get a standing ovation today at this podcast?
Well, I certainly hope so.
Yeah. Well, good. And secondarily, well, we hope you do too. Lots of people very interested in what you have to say. Our second guest with us right now, his name is Kevin Barry. He's director of construction at United Service Workers Union. Kevin, how are you?
Very good, Joe.
Another standing ovation for you. Guys, what's going on? We're excited to talk with you. You know, let's take this one at a time. Brian, we'll start with you. What is the Joint Apprenticeship? Let me try that again. What is the JATC, and what do you do, and how do you do it?
The Joint Apprenticeship, the JATC, or the JATF, the Joint Apprenticeship Training Center, or the Joint Apprenticeship Training Fund, trains construction workers in five different disciplines. We train in the HVAC industry for service. We train in fire sprinkler, sheet metal worker, fire sprinkler, and in plumbing, as well as steam fitting. And we take applicants who are coming in from the ground level, and we get them employed. And that's where the joint comes in. It's between the employer and between us. We're doing the technical behind the scenes training, and the employer is doing the on the job. We don't like to call it on the job training any longer. We like to call it on the job learning. So the two combinations put together just makes an extremely powerful training instrument to educate these men and women on how to do their jobs.
Success. Yeah, that's great. And Bill, I'm going to pass it to you to give me the first set of questions after I ask Kevin this. Kevin, you're director of construction at United Service Workers Union. Besides the obvious, what is the United Service Workers Union? What do you guys do, and how do you do it?
Okay, so we are the United Service Workers Union. We're a national union. Our international union that we're affiliated is also called the International Union of Journeymen and Allied Trades. We represent roughly amongst everybody about 100,000 people within the United States. And we represent everybody from public sector to private sector, from construction workers to auto technicians, to bus drivers. We do it all. We represent and organize in every industry.
Bill, I know you find some of this fascinating.
I find it all fascinating. My background is in more traditional higher education. But one of the things that we've seen happening, and especially through the pandemic, is that there is a renewed emphasis on what we used to call vocational training, training that sometimes used to be done at community colleges, but has sort of fallen by the way there. And in areas that you guys are involved in, you know, pipe fitters and plumbers and sheet metal workers and HVAC, HVAC especially is important out here in Phoenix where I live. And so it's, I'm really interested in how you go about doing what you're doing. I guess the first question I'd like to ask is, how do you find students, or how do they find you, and are there any entry qualifications?
How they find us, we advertise locally as well as through the New York State Department of Labor, up on their website as well. The New York State Department of Labor has an entire list of apprenticeships throughout the state, and they authorize us at certain times to open up enrollment. And it is at that point where we get the influx of applicants coming in to fill out applications. Our minimum qualifications are a high school diploma, a GED or a TASC, and also at least 1 year of high school algebra in order to enter the program. Once they enter the program, then we start to build on those minimum skills.
Uh-huh. I'm interested about the high school algebra, because I noticed that on your team, you had a picture of an instructor of mathematics. Is that person there to help fill that gap?
That is correct. We have from the Suffolk County Community College, we have one of their instructors who I kind of believe in consistency. So the way I've designed and set up the program is I have the math being taught from day one when you enter the program all the way until you're leaving the program by the same person. And I don't need to tell you, but a lot of people may teach math differently or do math a little differently. And for people who aren't really mathematicians, I should say, they kind of get lost. So I believe in the consistency of the one instructor taking them from start to finish. Now, being that instructor doesn't know the particulars of the application of the math to the trade, I also have a trade instructor with that person. And this way they can then take what is being taught on the math side and make it where they can use it on the job site.
Excellent. I've got one more introductory sort of question here, and then I'll throw it back to you, Joe. How are these programs funded? Do the students pay, or is it state supported?
No, I'll take this one, Brian.
Go ahead.
What happens is we are a union. So all of our union employers, under their collective bargaining agreement, pay so much an hour for every one of their workers out in the field into our apprenticeship fund. So the more and more contractors that are involved, and they get involved because what's lacking out there today is good qualified people. So they want to get involved with us so they can get good trained people. Not only does Brian have the apprenticeship, but they also do skill improvement classes for guys that might already be journeymen, but a new technique or a new skill or a new technology comes out. They also come to our school to be educated in that. So it's really a union driven collective bargaining agreement that funds this. So it costs the young apprentices nothing but maybe $100 a year for their books, and it's their books to keep.
Wow. That's
amazing.
That is terrific.
They go to work every day, and they work 8 hours out in the field, and then they come to us at least two nights, sometimes three nights, from 6 to 10 at night.
Wow.
On their own time.
So this is attractive for the employer, right? So an apprenticeship program must be attractive to the employers. That's because the employer gets to say, and I'm walking through this model and you tell me where I'm off. You know, I want to train my own people, train them the way that my organization does something, you know, find people who are interested in this. We fill the gap for us. And then we end up with a trained workforce that knows our business in the way that they need to know our business. Is that the attractiveness to an employer?
Yeah, well, they love to have the trained people. That is the key. And it's so hard to find today. So we interview that we have a joint committee, half employers, half the union. Brian chairs the committee when we do all our interviews and everything. And you go through an interview process to get selected to come in. And if you get selected, you get put on a list. You're on that list for 2 years. And the people of our employers call and say, listen, I'm looking for an apprentice in steam fitting. I'm looking for an apprentice in plumbing, sheet metal. Brian then goes to the list, pulls them from the list, sends them to the employer. He interviews them. If he likes them, then he hires them. And that's how it goes from there.
What's the pipeline of students look like? Because, you know, some of the things you mentioned, like HVAC, fire sprinkler, steam fitting, you know, for the average American doesn't know much about this. You have to have a propensity to want to work with your hands, do this really hard work. And, you know, are those types of careers out of fashion in a technology world where there's, you know, where we just, are there, I don't know the right way to ask, but are there still lots and lots of students interested in these hands-on, you know, blue collar careers, or is it something that we're having to reconvince students on this model that you can do really well in these careers and that there's a lot of work to be had when in the past, maybe they hadn't thought that?
Well, I'm just going to, Brian, I'm going to start, and then I'd like you to finish up on the technology and how our training center and the technology that we use, because technology just isn't, you know, involved with everything but trades. It's so involved now with the trades. I'm going to let Brian talk about that. But finding people to come to this program, we usually advertise. We get plenty of people to come because it's a union contract. They get fully paid medical for them and their families. They get vacations. They get holidays. They have a retirement program. They have a 401k as well. You know, there's the options for them are unbelievable. We have quite a few people that come to us that have four-year degrees and went out in their fields and decided, you know, this wasn't for me, or it wasn't paying enough to satisfy them. So they're looking for something different, where once you have a trade, you go anywhere in the country and get a job. There's nothing stopping you. There's electricians needed everywhere. There's plumbers needed. There's steam fitters needed. There's tin knockers needed. So that's really the upside for them. They're working under a union agreement. And, you know, it's a really good benefit structure.
Yeah. And, you know, and I know you're going to have Kevin jump in. I'm sorry. Yeah. Who is Brian. That? Brian. Yeah. See, I'm getting you guys mixed up because I can't see your faces. That's how good I am here on the microphone. The secondary part of that question that you were alluding toward is that we had a college president on a while back, and he was using the example of you know, garbage and being picking up garbage, and you don't just go and have a career like that where you're doing this hard work. It takes technology now. Like you've got some crane that lifts off the garbage truck. You've got to know geometry. There's an iPad controlling it in your car, and that is extended to all trades one way or another. The technology is enhancing the ability to do these trades, whether it's laser pointers that tell you the heat. If you're, I'm making this up, steam fitting. I mean, what is the impact of technology on these careers? Because it's not just go and learn how to do it anymore. It's like you have to know the technology around it too.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And you kind of hit the nail on the head. The technology, especially in the trades, is changing every day. One of the advantages that we have here at the Joint Apprenticeship Training Center is that all of our instructors are actively working in the field. So they are bringing today's technology to the classroom. These are not instructors that, you know, graduated and, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but graduated from college some 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago and haven't really been keeping up with the technology or just teaching out of a book. So as all of this technology keeps flooding in, our instructors are bringing it into the classroom, which is is outstanding. Outstanding. One of the things I just wanted to back up on real quick, as you had mentioned the employer and Kevin had expounded on that, I also like to point out the fact that when these applicants come into the program, they come in with a job. They come in with all of the benefits that Kevin had already described to you, and they're getting the education, and I'm not a politician, so I won't use the word free, but being paid for by someone else. And all the apprentice is required to pay for is his books. So you're being paid an hourly rate. You have a complete benefit package that is being paid for by the employer, and you're being trained now to become a journey worker. You know, this is just a career path that, you know, to me, and I guess I'm a little prejudiced, but I just think it's absolutely fabulous. The technology in the HVAC industry changes. Wow. We have building management systems that back in my day, we had people that would go into buildings and turn lights on and start up elevators and turn on the HVAC equipment. That's all being done now by computer. So you need to know how to get into the computer to make sure you're putting out the right temperature, that the door did unlock at 6 a.m. and it did lock at 5 p.m. Lights come on and off, depending on cleaning people, security. It just goes on and on and on. And the same with all of our other trades. You know, as you've pointed out, we're using lasers, you know, to measure pipe runs. There's a new program out called BIM, Building Imaging Systems, which is a 3D model of this building. And we can now take an entire plumbing system and put it into that 3D image and see how it works. Then we can add the fire sprinkler and see if there's any hits where pipes are hitting other pipes or ductwork or what have you.
And for the coordination of trades, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just amazing of what's going on out here right now.
Amazing, amazing.
You said it. Somebody said amazing. Yes. That sets off the amazing button. You know, one person I'd like to transition here, because one person that that is getting up to date on technology is my co-host, Dr. Bill Papicello, who's now apparently, word on the street here, Bill, is that you may be starting a podcast. I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, technology continues to advance, my friend.
Well, yeah, well, let me just remind you that at one point I was the president of the largest online university in the world, so I know a little bit about technology. And well my said, Bill. My dad was a master welder 100 years ago, and in those days, everything was, as you mentioned, Brian, on the job training, and that's where he learned his skills, and he learned skills to the point where there was a leak in a nuclear reactor in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and all of the college-trained people couldn't figure out what to do. And they brought my father down, and he showed them how to fix it. And it's really encouraging for me to see that there's still that kind of impetus out there in the workforce. But one thing I'd like to follow up on, because I think that you're both very proud of this, is that now, there's great quality in your programs, which is proven by the fact that they are accredited. And I wonder if you could just say a few words about your accrediting body and how that speaks to the quality of your programs.
Well, there's a couple of different accreditations. One is from the New York State Department of Labor that has certified all of our programs to meet the minimum requirements of the United States Department of Labor. We are also accredited by the NCCER, which is the National Center for Construction Education and Research. They are a national program out of Florida with over, I think they have about, at this point, I think it's around 100 or 103 different trades. They're very big on the pipeline down south. We have partnered with them, and we are using their curriculum in all of our trades. Bill, you had mentioned welding. In our steam fitting program, we have welding, and they have an excellent component for welding to teach them, you know, from setting up the machine all the way through, you know, the welding process. We are also, I'm authorized by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to teach the OSHA 10, the OSHA 30. We are very big on safety, as is up here in New York, especially in New York City. I'm authorized also by the New York City Department of Buildings to teach what they have in place, they call a site safety training program, to ensure that all of these workers that are working within the confines of New York City all have these credentials as it pertains to safety, so that the workers aren't getting hurt. So the moment our applicants turn into apprentices and come into our program, the very first thing that I personally teach them is the OSHA 30 on how to work safely and what to be looking for and what hazards that we should be looking for.
Great.
Interesting.
The welding came up because I looked at the video on your website, and there's a spot in there where they're showing the welders being trained, and it just, you know, jogged my memory back so quick. You know, one of the other things I noticed, and then I'll get out of your way, Joe, and you can take over here, is I think there's an underlying concern that your institution is, and the whole approach is more than just training, that, you know, you mentioned safety, you mentioned having an optimum working environment for your students. And one of the things that I'm particularly impressed by is the fact that you are concerned with green building and carbon footprints. And I wonder if you might say a few words about that.
Yes, we teach the USGBC, the United States Green Building Council. We teach a lot of their information to our students as far as, you know, we're going green. I think we all know that, and we are headed in that direction. From everything from prior to building a building, the land that you're going to use, what trees are you going to take down? How is the building going to be situated in order to face or not face the sun? What type of high efficiency equipment are you putting into it? What type of light? All of this is being taught to our apprentices, as well as how do you, if you're demoing a building in today's day and age, when I say a building, we do a lot of where we'll come into an office building and demo a tenant space for a new tenant to come in. It has to be rebuilt to their specifications. So when we take out our equipment, we're no longer just throwing it in dumpsters to end up in a landfill. It's actually being separated, where metals are going to a medical refinery, where glass is going to a different refinery. If we're taking out any type of housekeeping pads, which are concrete, those are being put in a different dumpster to go out and be recycled, so that we are starting to follow along with the USGBC and become, you know, more conscious, you know, of the earth, of the planet, and how are we setting up these buildings.
Hey, everybody, head over to www.edupexperience.com, our website, where you're going to find all of the episodes that we've recorded categorized so that you can ensure that you're spending your time listening to the podcasts that are most important to you. You're going to see the reviews of our podcasts, the shows in our network, our partners, and a section on starter episodes. If you're new to the Edup Experience, listen to those starter episodes and get a feel for how the podcast has evolved over time and our impact in the world. www.edupexperience.com. Well, guys, this has been a great conversation. I do want to interrupt this conversation to play a game, because this is just such a serious podcast here at the Edup Experience. We're going to play a little bit of a game called a Higher Ed Word Association. Guys, are you ready for this?
Sure.
Okay.
Here we go. For no money. Actually, Bill, you're the only one that doesn't get any money.
Yeah.
just because.
Anyway, can I have bills?
What's that?
Can I have bills?
Yeah, you could have bills. And Bill doesn't need anything. He's had plenty.
Cheers.
Of those on vacation. So listen, guys, I'm going to give you a word or a phrase, and I want you to respond to it with the first group of thoughts that come to your head. And we'll do this at Brian, you'll go for the first two. You'll go first. And then in Bill, you get to go too. And then Kevin, you get to go on the last two first. Okay, ready?
Okay.
Here we go. Brian, college degree.
Useful.
Kevin, college degree.
Sometimes not for everyone.
Bill, college degree.
It's something that's being reconsidered right now for its value in education in general. And I think saying it's probably not for everyone is spot on.
Who's the academic of you three? The academic always goes longer, just for the record, answers longer.
That's rude.
Well, Bill, you know, where's my gong button? Two, Brian, number two, student debt.
Student debt here, non-existent.
Kevin, student debt.
Outrageous, and we should be looking at a better way to have our young people get an education.
Bill, student debt.
Out of control. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey, Bill, we want you to go. Come on, man. All right. Kevin, you get to go first. Future of work.
Technology driven.
Brian, future of work.
In the trades. Absolutely in the trades.
Bill, future of work.
Completely changed because of the pandemic.
Good answers, you guys. All right, Kevin, last one. Blue collar.
My roots, where I come from.
Brian, blue collar.
Yeah, I got to go with Kevin.
Bill, blue collar.
The undergirding of the United States.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This has been another episode of Higher Ed Word Association. What'd you guys think of that? Kind of fun, right?
Yeah, it was. Definitely. All right, good.
We need a better host, though.
Wait a second.
I knew you were saving up for that, Bill.
Anyway, where's my mute button for Dr. Bill Pepitello? Guys, the apprenticeship model is one that is continually discussed within higher education. In fact, there's a guy out there that writes about apprenticeships really being, you know, full cycle. There used to be apprenticeships back in the day, and then everything kind of shifted to formal education, and now apprenticeships are coming back. Can you talk about interest? You talked about that you'd have no problem getting students interested, but what are the questions like? You know, do students say, is it a question of, should I go to college or should I do an apprenticeship? Is it, should I do an apprenticeship or should I go to a non-credit program to get these skills? How does the apprenticeship model communicate to a student?
Well, when I talk to high school students and I'm trying to get to the guidance counselors, because this is not really being offered, at least not in these parts, as a career path. It's mentioned briefly, but a lot of the students that I talked to had no idea that this existed. And they would have opted for this as opposed to going to a 2 or a 4 year college and taking on all that debt that we just spoke about a few moments ago. So I think we're doing a terrible disservice to the young people by not offering this as a career path, a legitimate career path.
Yeah, that's interesting. Bill?
Well, I couldn't agree more. As you know, Joe, I've been around for a while. And in one of my sub-careers, I worked at a teaching hospital in Philadelphia. And in those days, all of the healthcare technicians were required to do an apprenticeship. And it was, you know, it was just a normal part of the programs there. And then it sort of dwindled away. I think part of it was as the 4-year degree sort of became the gold standard and people forgot about the trades and their value. So it's For me, I agree completely that it ought to be part of what guidance counselors are talking about in high schools. And, you know, even in college, I have a granddaughter who, when she graduated high school, came to me and said, "Grandpa, I don't think I want to go to the college right away." And I said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And she said, "Well, I'm going to work. I want to find out what I like, what I want to do, and then maybe I'll think about going to college to pursue that." And you know, it's exactly what she did. She went into the food industry of all places, but decided that she really liked management in that area. And so now she's ready to go to college. And I think that's, you know, rather, you know, you guys mentioned that sometimes somebody with a four-year degree comes back and says, you know, I can be more productive in the trades. I think that works both ways, that somebody can get into the trades and say, wow, you know, the trades are a pathway to something else, but maybe I need a certificate or a degree to better myself in that way. So I think you're spot on.
Guys, what do you think about in terms of unions, you know, in terms of the unionizing of these employees, how important is the union to protection of these careers, of these people, of these employees, of the work itself?
Well, listen, unions are the backbone. And we're the blue collar people. We're the ones paying the taxes to support the country. We're out there every day. And as long as unions don't lose their way, I was with a traditional building trades union prior to coming with the union I'm with now. And some people they have to realize they work for their employer. They don't work for the union. The union is the people that come in and negotiate their benefit package and their contract every 3 years. And that the employer who's employing them and signing their checks every day are the people that they have to work hard for. I know when I came to this union, I was with the electricians union, IBEW, for 18 and a half years. And everybody was relying on the union for their job because they had a hiring hall. When I came here and we started these apprenticeship programs 22 years ago, we have our guys that work for their employers. And I tell them, listen, you're a member of the union, but you work for your employer. And the harder you work and make that employer money, the more we're able to ask for a contract time, the more jobs he's going to get, so we're productive. We have to be the best we're out there. When I organize a new company, I always tell them, don't think because you become a union member now that you're going to slack or you know these mantras that people put out there that, oh, you're in the union, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that. I said, you got to work twice as hard now because you're union. So I think the union is the key way to go for people that, you know, when I was a young man, my father was an electrician. My grandfather drove a train, and they always wanted me to go to college. And then I got to the point where I graduated high school. And you know what? That wasn't my thing, but they always wanted us to do better than them. And now everybody thinks they need to go to college. And you know what? That's not the case. The trades is a good, hardworking, satisfying industry.
Well, I'll take it from somebody who was the champion of the four-year degree. There are a lot of people in the trades making more money than people with a college degree right now. I'm sort of the exception to that rule, but I think you're exactly right. People are getting a new appreciation of what it means, not just to have a college degree and its value, but you know, what is a satisfying career? And I think, you know, we have people who come and help service us, plumbers in particular, because we get some rough weather and conditions out here in the desert. And you know what? Those people they're hardworking. They love what they're doing. And I can tell you from the bills I get, they're making a good living.
You know, the other part of that, though, is to your point, Kevin, when you think about this, you don't understand the full impact of people in trade careers until you need someone to fix something that's broken and you can't get anyone. And the case in point, I spent the last 4 years in California. I'm transitioning now in my new role at Lindenwood University out to St. Louis. But while I was in California, and your renters and our fridge broke, and they said they couldn't get out a technician to fix a refrigerator for us for 3 weeks. And I said, are you kidding? And you take that example and you apply it to all the careers, HVAC and whatever, and you can't get people to do this work anymore because there's so much demand and not enough supply.
Yeah, and you look at some of these young people that come into trade. There's guys I went to apprenticeship program with that are very, very successful electrical contractors today. You know, they took it to that next step, you know, and they became great, great. They weren't just great electricians. They became great businessmen too.
Yeah.
So it's you can do whatever you want. It's just hone your trade, learn your skill, and be the best at it.
Bill, do you have any further questions for our gentleman today before I wrap it up?
Well, of course I do. I always have further questions.
Oh gosh, here we go.
We've been talking about technology. And so in that regard, I just wondered, is there any component to your hands-on programs that is online or sort of distance education?
At this time, I am not doing any of my training online. It has been offered by OSHA. It also has been offered by the New York City Department of Buildings for the site safety training I mentioned earlier. The NCCER also has some. I'm kind of old school. I'm teaching you a trade, and I try to assault your senses when you're from the auditory, the visual, the tactile learner, and I can't do that online. I need to put a valve in your hand so you can see how that valve works. I need to, if I'm going to teach welding, very difficult to teach you welding via a Zoom. Be here. I need you to touch it. I need you to see it. If I'm teaching ladder safety, I need you to get on and off that ladder under my expert eye so that I can see that you're actually using that tool correctly. So right. I'm not a big fan at this point, Bill, of doing online, even during the pandemic. I steered away from it. I was shut down for about 4.5 months and then came back with a vengeance, and we caught up. The guys came in extra and we caught up on our time and on our schedules and got where we needed to be.
Wow. Well, I can tell you as a person who receives those services that I want the guy who's coming to provide that service to me to know how to do it hands-on. So
Well, absolutely. As Joe just mentioned a minute ago, we had a refrigerator. You have no idea the technology that these new refrigerators are inside of them, you know, compared to the older refrigerators. I mean, so these technicians, they have to be trained. And you can't do it on a Zoom because, again, you yourself know people get interrupted at home. The doorbell rings, the phone goes off, the neighbor's dog is barking, and your attention is no longer on the lesson. So you miss. Yeah,
who puts it on mute, goes into the bathroom, comes back, goes get a snack.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So you know, with this as it is,
they miss here, something.
You're in front of me. I can see when your head goes down and you look at your phone. You know, and I come flying across the classroom, you know. So, you know.
Yikes.
Yeah, exactly. That was a good one, Joe. That was a good one. So, again, I think it's important to have that in-person training.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, Joe, I know you you want the attention, so I'll throw it back to you.
Bill, your button used to be the gong, and it was actually named Bill. So every time I would hit it, the gong would go off. But I mean, this is the Bill button. Anyway, guys, we like to wrap up our episodes with the last the final two questions we ask every single guest, and I want to give you guys enough time to do them. Brian, we'll start with you. What didn't we say about JATC that you would like to say? Events you have going on, the website, anything that you wanted to say that maybe we didn't get to, kind of like take your plug opportunity to plug what you do to the audience. Same thing for you, Kevin. And then what do you see as the future of higher education? So What didn't we say about JATC? What didn't we say about USWU? And, you know, so you can go one at a time. And what does the future of higher education look like? And Brian, we'll start with you.
Well, from my standpoint, we covered a great deal in a half an hour for the Joint Apprenticeship Training Center. And everything that I put out there, you know, our website will be updated within the next month or so. So if you're up there now, please revisit us in about a month as we will be kind of renovating that, if you will. And again, this is an opportunity for a young person to, and I don't have Alzheimer's, I know I keep repeating myself, but a career path. It's extremely important to get that out there. It's a career path that we want to offer to the younger people, to the younger generation that's come in. It's not a job. And as Kevin alluded to earlier in this podcast, when he said that there's a committee that gets together both union and employer and interviews these people, they look for that word. They look for the word, I'm looking for a career, not I need a job, because this is a real commitment. You have to remember, this is a 4 and 5 year commitment, not only that you're making, that your family's making. You know, mommy's not at the dinner table or daddy's not at the dinner table 2 nights a week because he's here bettering his skills in order to better his family life as well. So, and if you don't have the website, it's www.jatf.uswu.net.
Kevin, we'll go to you. What do we need to say about?
Well, listen,
go for it.
I'm a union guy, born and raised that way. That's how I was put clothes on my back. That's how fed me as a kid. And, you know, I went to the same career. I went a little bit different. My father, state electrician. I, you know, became an officer of the union. I became a delegate. I made a switch and came over to this union. And I'll tell you right now, I'm getting toward the tail end of my career. And looking back, it was probably one of the best careers I've ever had. I mean, my kids will tell you as we pass a stadium or a building, if we're going into New York City or we're going somewhere, and I go, oh, did I tell you guys I worked on this job? Yes, Dad, we know. They actually, before we get there, they say, hey, Dad, there's the job you worked on now, and they roll their eyes. But it's a fulfilling, great experience. And as I get, like I said, as I get toward getting closer to retirement here, I look at my accounts, my annuity fund, my pension, my 401k. I remember being a young man and being on the negotiating committee for the first time. And I'll mention this guy's name. His name was George Martin. He was a seasoned electrician. And we were sitting down discussing on the union side what we need. And we said, listen, I was a young guy. We need more money in our envelope. And George Martin said, Kevin, we understand. We're going to put some money in the envelope. We're going to put it in retirement. He says, you're not going to understand that point now, but believe me, I understand it. We need to do this for the younger people. And as I'm getting closer to retirement, I'm not going to have a worry in the world, because thank God that the union funds did well, made great profits, you know, over the years in the market and this and that. And I know, looking back, I did never save that type of money on my own, because as you know, we all go through life. I put 2 girls through college already. Everything else that goes along, you know, something breaks, something you would dip into, something, that money, it was the best experience. And it was a great union career for myself. And the retirement aspect, the healthcare, it's been an amazing run.
You know, one thing we didn't say that I think that we should all recognize, and, you know, and when I say we all, listeners, all of us, that the blue collar, hardworking folks that we're talking about that are a part of JATC, United Service Workers Union, while coronavirus has been happening, these are frontline people. These are people, you know what, because when something breaks and you need somebody to come and fix it, it's not like you can wait a month and see what happens with coronavirus. If your heating goes out, you need to get your heat fixed. And I think that's something that needs to be said. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, no, definitely. Construction in the state of New York was considered essential. Our guys went to work every day. They got the virus, they got better, and they came back. We represent 30,000 home healthcare workers. They don't have a choice. They got to get up every day and go to work. You know, we're very, very fortunate. Our auto technicians also deemed essential. The home heating fuel industry deemed essential. there wasn't very many of our guys that were out of work for, you know, too long because it was essential. Everybody had to get to work.
Yeah, there you go. Bill, what do you think about that?
I'm absolutely right. I mean, we, everyone saw the effects of the pandemic and you know, what the frontline people in various careers had to do. But, you know, you're absolutely right. There are folks who don't have a choice. And, you know, I, for one, appreciated knowing that those people were out there on the front line. I mean, we should not forget that going forward, because as we start to get back to normal, I think people need to keep that, you know, front of mind, that who got us through some of the hardest times.
Correct.
Well, there you go, guys. This has been another episode of the EdUp Experience. First, I want to thank my guest co-host, the esteemed Dr. Bill Pepicello. Always good to have you here, my friend.
Always good to be with you, Joe. Appreciate it. And this was a great conversation, Kevin and Brian. Terrific.
Thanks,
Bill. It was a pleasure meeting you.
All right, my guest.
I really enjoyed it.
My guest, Brian Keating, he's director of the Joint Apprenticeship Training Center. My second guest, or my 1A guest, 1 and 1A, Kevin Barry, he's director of construction at United Service Workers Union. There's the standing ovations you guys deserve. Guys, I got to tell you, of all the 399 episodes that I've done, I got to tell you, this is like one of my top five conversations. I just love hearing about the hard working of people and the hard work ethic of people in the U.S. and the great work that we do, and appreciate what both of you do to keep the engine running, as it were.
Oh, thank you very much.
Appreciate it's a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just EdUpped. It's time to go live at Lucian Live 2022 in Denver, Colorado, April 10th through 13th at the Denver Convention Center. Discover the innovative solutions, transformative insights, and strong connections to help you lead through change. Register at Ellucian.com/EllucianLive and catch Elvin and I recording on-site live. We can't wait to see all of you. It's time.